I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me, as always, are the indefatigable Father Garrett Burns.
Yes, many have described me that way. How are we doing?
And the indefinable Father Drew Hoffman.
I think that's better, but I guess I don't know.
Guess you have to look. You got homework to do after the podcast. Look Virtual it up.
Plus. What does Garrett's word mean?
It means like not doesn't get tired. Like
okay, yeah.
Full of energy and always going. You're a blonde saint. You're indefinable. Yeah. You don't exist in the church history.
I had mass at Capon at 7:10 this morning. I'm like, I'm a martyr. I woke up, my alarm went off at 6:25 this morning. I'm like, Jesus, I give you everything. My gosh.
Talk about a morning offering.
I'm a college chaplain.
You got mass at what time?
7:10 a.m.
And you got up at what time?
6:25.
And you,
I found out I had this mass at 10 p.m. last night. So it wasn't exactly like I've had this on my calendar for a long time.
Well, today, in honor of our guest that you just heard there, we are recording in the studio of St. Patrick because our guest is none other than the longtime conversation piece of the podcast, Father Pat York. Welcome, Pat.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thank you, Chad.
Your nephew.
You have no idea how excited I am.
Your nephew-in-law sent us a list of people who get the most mentions on the podcast, and you were far and away the number one.
Have you ever been on a podcast before?
Mike Nolan and I every year do a little song and dance for the EWTN station.
Oh, okay. Okay.
As far as like raising money, we sit there and just prattle on for 3 hours.
Well, this will not be 3 hours. No. We got things to do today. But yeah, you get the most mentions in the podcast because, well, you have a long history with all three of us.
Been around a long time.
I was gonna say it in nicer words, but
no, you're still young.
I had to look through the Diocesan app, but so I was just finishing eighth grade when you became my pastor at St. Peter's.
Well, that's nice because I never saw you. I mean, you know, I always heard that Chad Arnold was a member of the parish and that he was, you know, one of my utes, but I no idea what you even looked like.
Yeah, I wasn't really active in the parish in that way. I mean, I was at Sunday Mass. I didn't serve or that, but you were still my pastor when I became more active,
right.
When I joined seminary, and you were also assistant vocation director at the time.
Yeah, I carried McGinnis's luggage.
My gosh.
That's pretty much all assistant vocation director did.
What, is Not that what we do?
Yeah,
that
what we are?
Wow. And I didn't realize that was part of the plan, but when I go to Nome, Alaska, you guys are driving me to the airport.
Oh, man.
And then every now and then, you know, we would play good cop, bad cop, and I was always the bad cop.
Yeah. Huh?
Always.
See, and I must have the reverse role because you were my pastor. When I was in seminary, I think you often more had to be the good cop for me and Matt had to be more the hammer, which seemed to happen on more than one occasion in my journey in seminary.
I think he kind of enjoyed it with you.
Ouch.
That's funny because you've been bad cop in my life most because everybody else was good cop. Like everyone's like, you're doing so good. Like I need someone to tell me something other than great job or like you'll be fine, I'm sure. I need someone to tell me something else other than that.
And in comes Pat.
Yeah.
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 My privilege.
Yeah, I know. What an honor.
I went to seminary because Pat told me to work at McDonald's one summer.
Is that true?
I was at Quivadis, and the plan was to like go and study abroad in Australia. And I was like, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I'm toast to us, or I don't know, blah, all this stuff. He's like, just go home, work at McDonald's, and you'll figure it out, or something like that. And then somewhere or another, God used it, and I went to seminary. So but
did you go home and work at McDonald's?
No.
See, I really think that every seminarian or every future priest should work in a fast food restaurant.
Ugh, I've never done it.
Well, I did in high school, I guess. So.
Because that's when you deal with the best of humanity, really, honestly.
You know, I'm seeing a similar Another similarity between you and Drew is you both have a lot of ideas. I'm not sure that all of them are great. That one I don't know about.
If you can deal with somebody at 10 o'clock on Friday night who is stinking drunk in a drive-thru at a fast food restaurant, if you can handle that, you can pretty well handle almost anything.
That's a good point.
I like that.
You should have conversations with one of the seminarians, Richard Olson, who worked Taco Bell for a while, and he regularly comes up with stories from his Taco Bell drive-thru days and the type of people. He says one time someone came through with a monkey in the car.
Well, that sounds like Brett Brennan. Father Brett Brennan used to, who is the spiritual director at the Josephinum now? He used to drive, he had a brown capuchin. He used to drive around with a brown capuchin, you know, in his Jeep. And that's how he used to attract
women. He had a monkey?
He used to attract women. He had a monkey. Yes, he had a monkey.
I've never thought about that as a way to attract women. I still don't know what I think about that. We're going to see him in a few days. I'm going to have to ask him about that.
Ask him. You know, I'm sure the monkey had more cred than he did. But
I have never heard that before. I am going to definitely bring that up when I see him.
So can I tell a semi-scandalous story?
We kind of expect that.
Okay. So I was like, I don't know, 19, 20, and had more than my share of 3-2 beer.
No one talks about 3-2 beer more than Pat York. I've never heard that phrase ever other than you talking about
because you have no idea what it is. At that time in the great state of Kansas, you could if you're 18 years old, you could drink 3.2 beer, which was just water. I mean, if you drank
enough,
if you drank enough, you did get a little, you know, you got a little of a buzz and then you had a heck of a headache the next morning, right? But you could drink enough to make you stupid. So we went out for Taco Bell, and it was a Taco Bell. So on West Street, not too far from Kellogg. Now this is a long time ago. I was 19, 20 years old, and I had my share, and I looked up and I saw the bell on top of the Taco Bell restaurant.
Uh-huh.
So I looked at my buddies and said, "I'm going to go ring the bell." So I shimmied up the tailpipe, right? At 11 o'clock at night to go ring the bell on the top of the Taco Bell restaurant.
I
cannot imagine that.
One of the things I wish there were videos of.
Yeah.
One of the most profoundly disappointing experiences in my whole life because it was plastic. It wasn't even a real bell. You couldn't even ring this stupid thing.
I don't even know where to begin with the realization of that.
Yeah. Things have changed in your life.
Was the guy working at Taco Bell, did he want to be a priest? Is that like, and he like dealt with you? That's your,
you know, that's one of the
Father Bernie Georges.
That's one of the nights where I remember what happened before, but not too much what happened afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sure we got some Taco Bell and that's probably made my stomach upset.
It was probably the Taco Bell that made you sick.
Yeah,
it was
not right.
the 3-2. It was the Taco Bell that made you sick.
3-2 Coors, man.
Oh, jeez.
Yuck.
Getting you a 3-2 beer for your 30 seconds.
Well, all three of you of us have known you too because of your involvement with Knights of the Holy Queen. Is that where you two first met?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. So, because you were for many years just very active as chaplain, really until you left to go work at Conception.
Right.
And you were active as that. And that was definitely hugely influential in all of our lives. And I think we all have different Pat stories from those times. I remember when I joined seminary. You were pastor at St. Peter's, and I had long hair at the time, and you told me that the rule was that, I had the same rule as girls had, that I had to wear my hair in a ponytail if I were going to serve Mass, and you required that I serve Mass, and the only cassock that was there, because I didn't own a cassock at the time, was too long, so it was like a little train that would trail behind me with my hair in a ponytail, and every time we'd get up to the altar, you're just like, you look like a Jesuit. Just starting to Mass.
And you know, that wasn't a compliment.
No, I did not receive it as such.
You know, the Knights of Holy Queen is probably one of those noticeable moments in my life where it's just where you know you can see where you know God just kind of worked it and made me part of it because I really honestly I was a little put off with the Knights of Holy Queen before I joined because they were taking my guys and you know and the guys were going to go and they were hanging out with the Knights but they really weren't doing too much with my youth group. So
that's part of the reason I wasn't at the youth group at St. Peter's because I was involved with the Knights.
Huh. The Holy Queen. Mm-hmm. And I was just like a little wound up. So I remember having a very frank discussion with Tony and Chris about that, Tony Brandt and Chris Stewart. And of course, typically they just ignored me. You ever notice that about them?
Oh, they love doing
that. Can look, I mean, they can look right through you, man. The only other person I've ever known that could look right through you was Bishop Gerber. Mm. Bishop Gerber could look right through you with those steely blue eyes right to the depths of your soul, and you knew you were had.
Yep.
But anyway, so they didn't care. But so within a rather short few weeks, I mean, they asked me to start coming around. And then they, you know, asked me if I'd be more interested in, you know, putting some ownership into this. And by that time, yeah, I was open to it. But as far as like, you know, hanging out with the guys and being there with them and, you know, just kind of enjoying their company. It was pleasurable. But what really, I think, happened to me as a man and as a priest is that really it deepened my own personal devotion to the Blessed Mother. Mm-hmm. Now you would think after having like 5 years of seminary and being ordained, I don't know how many years I was ordained by then, you know, that would be in place. Well, no, it was a work in progress, and it still is. Like anything that we have to do in our spiritual life, it's a work in progress. But when that time came around, you know, I was just like hitting 40. And, you know, and it was, I don't know. It's not the fact that I was having a vocation crisis. I've never really had a vocation crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, when I feel one coming on, I typically go out and buy a new car and get over.
How true that is. Isn't that? Yeah.
And, you know, go take a nap. But, but you all did fulfill a need. Because I think it's natural for a man to want to be married, for a man to want to have a wife, a companion. It's natural for a man to want to have children, to have a son. I think that's natural. I think it's healthy. It's good. It's just part of how we function as a race. But you know, so when I walked into that group, it very much became kind of like a father-son mm-hmm. type mm-hmm. of situation for me. You know, father, of course, you know, the chaplain, but also just, you know, to hang out and just to do things that, you know, men do with their sons. This was fun. You yeah. know, even though I'm one of the most unathletic chaplains the Knights of Holy Queen ever had, because I can't walk no. without tripping.
In great shape.
Oh, remember that time you rang the Taco Bell bell?
Taco Bell.
Shimmied up the...
Hey, if I could shimmy up a Taco Bell
there
building,
was a time.
There was a time. So, I mean, it was just, it was good, you know, and to walk with these guys and to journey with these guys and to have, you know, I never really entered into that role or into that group of thinking about, yeah, I'm just going to influence guys for the priesthood. That never really crossed my mind. I just went because, you know, typically like I do everything in the church. Okay, somebody asked me to do this. I can do this. So I do it. And then, you know, we see what happens. And it was good. It was a good run. I mean, I made it. I mean, stop and think about it. You know, most priests, from what I understand, start losing interest in youth activities like into their early to mid 40s. So they just, you know, they become busier. They have more responsibility. They have other things to distract them. I mean, I was like well into my 50s when I finally looked at, you know, Drew and Burns over there. And I said, look, you guys got to take this over. I am grandpa. You know, I don't mind coming and hanging out every now and then, but as far as like, you know, wanting to do things with them or having the desire to do things, I mean, it's still there, but you know, the energy or the creativity, I mean, you know, that's your all's job. It's time for the, you know, the guys who were part of the group who are now priests, you know, to take on that role. Every now and then Drew's good. He will include me in something. And if I can,
every go, now and I, then, I Drew
it's like
is
inviting
good.
Grandpa to Christmas dinner. Oh,
Grandpa. Right. Grandpa's coming.
Tell us about the old days.
No, we never heard this story before.
Just Jell-O salad.
Just ignore him as he drools on the front of his shirt. Never mind.
Well, two very vivid kind of general experiences that I have, and now I'm kind of one of the. It's an unofficial, not an official title or anything, but I kind of keep an eye on the Knights along with you two.
I generally think of you as chaplain of the
yeah,
Knights,
and primarily, but. And so I go over there in the summer. I'll go over there at the end of Mass to see them, or I'll join them. But during the school year, I'm not there all that much other than the retreats and Christmas party we had here the other day and stuff like that. But Pat, you were always Thursday night sitting with the Knights at yeah. Mass. You'd already celebrated your Mass for the day. Right. So you would just sit with the Knights
right.
as they attended Mass. And I always took that for granted. Now as a pastor, it's like,
yeah,
jeepers, man,
amen.
To do that every Thursday. And then something that I now we do. You're driving out to retreat, saying mass for us, and then driving back. It's like, again, we kind of took that for granted. Then you had 2 or 3 masses the next day at Church of the Magdalene, but we're taking an hour to drive out to Pilsen for us, or St. Rose, or whatever the case might be. And so those just being with us, and I know you said didn't think about influencing men to the priesthood, because you're just with us, and that meant the world to us.
Yeah, you were definitely a great model to me and to many of that, the paternal side of the priesthood of what we've talked about before. And yeah, I think per capita, I don't know anything that would compare to the Knights as far as the number of priests, and not only the number of priests, but the number of guys that went into seminary out of Knights, even though did not eventually get ordained. Right. But there's been a lot of Knights that have been in seminary, and there are, for a small group, for a round short period of time, there are a lot of priests that are Knights of the Holy Queen.
That's true. I'm sorry, Garrett.
I was just gonna say, so many times I've just seen you not just at church. Like it was like a thing when we were in high school. Like once you turn 18, Father Pat would buy you a cigar.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right.
My first cigar was with you after I turned 18. And you specifically told me, if you get sick from this, you do not tell your mom you got this from me. Yeah. First cigar was
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, all three of us, first cigars with you.
Yeah. That's a proud moment.
It is. It was a good man. And the law was different. I think the law is different now.
The law is different now.
But it was, and so you're actually good about that with the men still following the rules, but that wasn't the law then.
I forgot about the law.
Yeah, the law has changed. Yeah, but New Year's Eve, what do we do on New Year's Eve? As it's getting close to midnight, we had a cigar this year. Cigar. And so
Well, I remember at one of the retreats out in Pilsen, a winter retreat, and so guys were, the guys that were of age, hounding you for a cigar, and so you passed out, but it was too cold to be outside, and so there wasn't really in there. So we were basically hotboxing like a suburban, like as many guys as you could fit inside of this with cigars. And like you'd look at it and just see a cloud of smoke with inside this suburban.
Oh my gosh.
For those of you who are my age, something ran out of cheek and chomp.
That's what it kind of looked like.
It's different. Let's be clear about that. Yeah,
very different.
Very different.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But one of the guys, I was talking with one of the Knights dads later on in life, and he was saying, that was one of the things that he appreciated about the Knights. Yeah, we did plenty of stupid things. Yeah, hot boxing cigars in a car. But he says, compared to what I worried about my kids getting out and smoking into, this was much better. They talked about how for a while it was the craze, the milk the gallon challenge, which is so dumb. So dumb. But guys would try and drink a whole gallon of milk in an hour and end up throwing it in the backyard. And we all thought it was hilarious because we were 18, 19. It was funny. But yeah, the dad's like, when I think of the things he could be throwing up in my backyard, like he's just trying to drink milk. Yeah, it's stupid. Yeah, it's a waste of $1.59. But I'm a much more okay with this than the other things I've worried about with some of my other children. And that was one of the great things of the Knights. We had room to be stupid, but it was a healthy stupid.
Yeah, so every doctor who's listening to this, or every medical professional who's listening to this, probably freaked out.
Yeah, not terribly healthy.
The idea of drinking a gallon. Where did those pictures come from?
You gave them to us. He's looking at two drawn pictures of the Mount St. Mary's here in the studio that, you gave here to the House of Formation.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah, those belonged to you at one time.
This is like Grandpa when he's over at the house.
He's looking at the photos on the mantle. Who are these children? They're yours.
That's you, Grandpa.
I know that's mine, but those were given to me by the student government at Mount St. Mary's. I was seminary representative. Huh.
They're nice drawings. Yeah, it was very kind of you to give them to us.
It's an awfully weak charitable moment on my end.
Yeah.
If you go up to the chapel, there's two more images in our chapel that you gave to us of the Sacred Heart and the Immaculate Heart.
Right. Well, and there's also a Last Supper scene, too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the Last Supper scene over there. So you go through pictures, apparently.
Yeah.
When you're ready to give away one of your cars, call me.
You ask much, little one. Yeah.
Well, we talk about messing around a Knights retreat, and we messed around a ton. And some of my favorite memories of my whole life are Knights retreats. But also, I have you challenged us one time at a Knights retreat. And I think not many of the guys were there of my age and stuff like that. I'm like, why am I? You challenged us to start praying the Liturgy of the Hours just out of nowhere. I went home. That was Sunday. Monday morning, I went as a high schooler and bought the Liturgy of the Hours, the four one volume that had like a Christian prayer. I started praying morning, evening, and night prayer. And that was a big part of early in college transforming my heart. So it's stuff like that, that the dumb gave us the freedom to actually have spiritual movements and changes.
Well, and all of us can quote your line you would tell us at nights all the time. I think you referred to it in another, when we were talking about Mary on the podcast. Yeah,
never make your mom cry.
Yeah, never make your mom cry. That's, never, you know, that's some tattooed on all of our memories. Right. Never make your mom cry. Right. And that's good advice.
So yeah, Bishop Jakeless asked me about that. He said, what is this never make your mom cry thing? And I said, that's kind of my whole outlook now in the entirety of my priesthood. So, you know, Dad told us that when we were growing up, he would say, you know, don't worry about embarrassing me. You can't embarrass me, which is true. There's no way that you can embarrass Roger York. Right? He said, but don't ever make your mother cry. And all of us lived that way. All of us boys lived that way. And then, you know, and then, you know, as I, you know, grew and matured and developed into, you know, an adult, I mean, I that still carried with me no matter where I was, no matter what I was doing. So how, you know, how would this affect my mother? But then when I became a priest, you know, it very much changed to not only my mother, but Holy Mother of the Church. That I don't want to do anything as a priest to make Holy Mother of the Church cry. Mm. I mean, she's had enough sad moments, enough difficult moments. You know, my responsibility as a priest of this church is to build up, not tear down. And ultimately, since Mom is, of course, you know, gone to heaven, it's which is an amazing thing. And gentlemen, you'll find this out. I remember Father Minocchio, who was a spiritual director at Mount St. Mary's, and he said, you know, your brothers will go on and become married and have their wives and children and their grandchildren, but you will always be your mother's little boy. But you won't understand that until after your mother's gone. Mm-hmm. That's true. You know, after Mom died, it's like, ooh, now I understand what he means. And also, you know, there's no more pulling the wool over her eyes. You know,
she sees everything now. Like,
oh my Lord. Now I really have to watch what I say.
Yeah.
But it's very much, it goes back to this maternal devotion and respect goes back to the Blessed Mother too. As our mother in heaven, as she prays for us, you know, Mary, she stands with us. In what we do and in our ministry. And, you know, to make Mary proud, if, you know, Mary's, you know, of course, and easily, you know, she can be made proud, but you know, not to do anything to damage that relationship, that Marian relationship. Cause if I damage that, then, you know, then that just, you know, weakens everything else. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to, don't make your mother cry. Boy, howdy.
All three of us have carried that forward in our priesthood, but this has never actually happened before. We got so distracted by other things. We had a banter topic lined up today. I think we've killed that time. So we're gonna throw that out the window just because we've been talking about other things. But we want to definitely get to, before we run out of time, your vocation story. Us three have heard it before because of nights and things, although it's been a while, so it'd be good to hear it again. But we've been inviting priests on the podcast and grateful for you to be here. So if you would share with us a bit of your own journey to the priesthood.
Sure. So 10 minutes or whatever? Okay. You know, it's really honestly not that exciting. It's not like, you know, I had this.
Well, that's all we got for. We're done.
You literally just told us a story in a pre-world where you climbed a Taco Bell tower.
And we're surprised that it wasn't a real bell, which is the part that amazes me.
So something changed in your life. Some things changed.
Oh, yeah. A lot of things changed.
That's a vocation story.
Well, what I mean by that is that it's not like I had this great epiphany where, you know, God came down and said, you are to be a priest. I mean, that doesn't happen. Now, I mean, I had plenty of people throughout my life saying to me, you know, you should be a priest. You should be a priest. You know, Sister Giovanni, God rest her good soul, from Bishop Carroll High School. Uh-huh. Like, you know, she damn near drove it, you know, into the ground. But she's like, Sister, you know, please don't. You know, just wanted to run in the opposite direction. But God, you know, bless her. She's a saint. She's a good woman. I mean, she's, you know, part of the seed that was planted. But, you know, at home, growing up in the York household, Mom and Dad always told us that they would, this is for the parents, right? They would support us and whatever we wanted to do, as long as we could tell them it was God's will. So it wasn't that Pat was to be the priest or Mike to be a priest or Steve to be a priest or my sister to be a religious. But if one of you wanted to do that, they would be pleased with that. Now, the truth be known, the old man would have been perfectly happy if all three of his boys became priests and my sister became a religious. He would have been thrilled. Mom, not so much. Mom wanted grandbabies. Mm-hmm. So when I made the big announcement that I was going to go off to the seminary, actually, it was kind of like a sigh of relief out of my brother's girlfriends. because both
that's a new angle.
Well, yeah, because both of you know, like, the pressure was off because both my brothers actually had thought about going to the seminary. I don't know. So it had to have been a very superficial thought. It didn't go very far. So they ended up marrying, you know, the girlfriends at that time are now their wives now. But to go off to the seminary and the years up to going to the seminary, I was pretty much a normal Catholic life. You know, we practiced our faiths. We weren't highly devotional. I mean, we're not as far as, you know, as a family goes. I mean, you know, we don't have high emotions. We're never really very, very high or very, very low. We're just kind of right in the middle, kind of, you know, life just the way life is. We're very practical. And, you know, this is what we do. This is how we live. And there's really no discussion. So, I mean, you know, go to Mass and, you know, go to confession and, you know, be active in the parish, which is just what we did. And is what was expected. And Mom and Dad sacrificed a great deal for our Catholic education. After graduating from Bishop Carroll High School, went to Benedictine College, where I had more than my share of fun. And I was like 13 years old, and I went and talked to this Redemptorist priest about becoming a priest. And he said, you know, just, you know, be open to whatever you want to do. I mean, it was in eighth grade. And then when Bishop Carroll High School, I went and talked to the high school chaplain, who's no longer with us. He's deceased. And I don't know, something happened with this guy. I mean, the first conversation that we had, I was a senior in high school. The first conversation that we had about it was really, it was a great conversation. And then something happened. And, you know, priests sometimes have, you know, bad days or, you know, we wake up on the wrong side of the bed or whatever, but he definitely was having a bad day. And turned me sour. So, I mean, that's just, you know, we had, you know, always have to be mindful that, you know, people have to be mindful that, you know, Father's not always going to be in a good mood. Come on, people. You have to remember that Father's not always going to be in a good mood. But, you know, as priests too, we have to, you know, push beyond that, you know. But anyway, it was probably a divine providence, because I don't know if I would have made it if I would have gone to college seminary. I mean, I had a lot of howling at the moon to do. And, you know, I was living in a pretty controlled environment when I was in high school, because the old man had a short leash on us. So when I went up to Benedictine College, it was like, you know, free at last. Like, sweet Jesus, I'm free at last. And I had a good time. I had such a good time that I almost flunked out. Matter of fact, that, you know, they put me on super secret probation my sophomore year.
Super secret probation. I've never heard of that.
My sophomore year. Yeah, I think it's a line out of Animal House. But I saw that movie, Animal House. I saw that in the 70s. It was hijacked. It was a hijacked copy of that movie at a frat at Wichita State.
Naturally.
And they were trying to recruit us, and it was just the coolest place, man. They had this basement, and it looked like something right out of the Animal House movie. Like, yeah, I thought that was going to be great. My mom wasn't very impressed by the fact that I was...
She definitely would have cried at that.
Yeah. She would have cried. Mom would have cried. So I went to Benedictine College. Well,
at that era, wasn't Benedictine a bit of a party school in that era?
In the 80s, and I was there, and I showed up in August of 1980. In the 80s, this is not something that, you know, President Steve Maness would remind them of. I mean, I would imagine they would hope that this would go away. But it was listed as one of the top 10 party schools from what I've heard.
It too has gone through a change and conversion in those years.
Literally, top 10 party school in the U.S., Benedictine College. It was crazy.
Never would have guessed.
It was crazy. I mean, today, I mean, it was a good school back then. Maybe kind of, this is 1980. We were right, you know, leaving the 70s. And I mean, it was a profoundly confusing time. You know, not that it isn't, you know, it is today, too. But, you know, really then. And so, I mean, the Catholic identity was going under, you know, a serious moment of change. And so was society. But anyhow, went up there and it was a good school. I mean, it was a really good school. It was a good Catholic school, but it's a great school today. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is light years difference today. I mean, absolutely. It's absolutely phenomenal. I'm so proud that that's, you know, my alma mater is Benedictine. So anyway, went up there and had, you know, Ever like every other college student. Classes, parties, girlfriends, my buddies that I hang out with, nice. You know, road trips, made some stupid mistakes, did things I wish I wouldn't have done. I'm sure there's things I have said and done that I don't remember, I'm sure. And which eventually began to develop into an issue that I had to contend with. But after I graduated from Benedictine, I applied for a job at one real job. I've applied for one real job, mm-hmm. and that was assistant director of development at Benedictine College.
Really?
And they hired me. And my job was to go around to St. Louis and Denver and Houston and Dallas and Kansas City and Wichita and to have these nice social functions with wealthy alumni and then just kind of just, you know, talk up the school. It was great. It was great work. Loved it. But there was something going on. I mean, I was, you know, the nag was returning. You know, in all of my nonsense, I think this is a point that I would like young people to listen to. In all of my nonsense and all my carrying on that I did at Benedictine College, which, like I said, was more than my share, the one thing I never quit doing was going to Mass. Mm-hmm. I kept going to Mass. I don't know why, because everybody around me, it was Catholic school, but everybody around me had, you know, wasn't going. But I just kept going. And I think that was necessary in instilling, you know, that seed, you know, God's vocational call was the Holy Sacrifice, the Mass. So once I got the job, which was great, the girlfriend, the car, which is great, there was still a nag. God was saying, there's something that I want you to do. You're not doing what you're supposed to do. So I finally got tired of it. And I gave the Diocese of Wichita a call in May of 1985. And we began the process of discernment, which from what I understand now, that was a very late phone call.
That's funny. David at least told us the exact same story when we interviewed him just earlier.
We start earlier than May now.
Yeah.
Call me before May, please.
Please do. Right. But, you know, talk to Ron Gilmore, Bishop Ron Gilmore. Mm. When I was talking to Bishop Ron Gilmore, he looked up over me and he said, please come in and meet this young man. And I stand up and I turned around. It was Bishop Gerber.
Hmm.
And then I had a couple of other interviews and I read a bunch of papers and all that kind of stuff. But pretty much it, psychological exam. But in the vocation story itself, there's, you know, a personal journey of conversion and recovery that I had to attend to. And this is no big secret, but because of a particular weakness, ultimately because of original sin, I can't drink alcohol. I drink alcohol and I get stupid. I drink alcohol and I forget what I have done and what I have said. You know, I drink alcohol and my eye begins to wander and look at things it shouldn't look at. So, you know, with the help of the seminary and encouragement of the diocese, I mean, I went into recovery from alcohol in 1987. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were going to show me the door, send me home. And I had to address that issue. And it's one of the best decisions I ever made. Because I addressed an issue, a weakness, something that was keeping me from doing God's will, I've had an absolutely amazing life. I mean, I don't drink to this day. I mean, none of these guys sitting here has ever seen me drink.
Never.
Two things that I've always admired about you, Pat, is that we joke around, like you tell the dumb Taco Bell story and stuff like that, and all these jokes and things like that. Which you have freedom to do because you asked for help. Like you legitimately, like it wasn't just a joking around thing. Like you asked and were humble enough to get some assistance and things like that. I just think that's so, like, mm-hmm. I noticed something and I didn't just keep making jokes about it. Like I actually got assistance and admitted something and I've so admired that. And also, like, I didn't know that about you until well into my years of knowing you. Because it doesn't like define, you're still always around, you're still always hanging, you're still always all of those things. But because you got assistance, I always just admire that asking for help and how that's changed and transformed your priesthood in this diocese.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing that I was, you know, a person who is in the throes of addiction with one thing or another, I mean, they pretty much have to lose everything. They have to kind of hit some kind of bottom. Well, I was going to lose the only thing I ever wanted to be. I mean, the only thing I ever thought about on a consistent basis was to be a priest. That's the only thing. In all those years of carrying on and ignoring the call, the consistent thought of being a priest was there. And I don't remember a time in my life when I did not think about being a priest. And I was going to lose it all. And it really kind of caught my attention. So.
When, what year were you ordained then?
1990.
Just still a young pup.
May 26, 1990. Yeah, you know, it's been an incredibly fast ride. I mean, I still think I'm going to wake up and be 39 years old.
Yeah.
The fact that I you know, every
no one in this room is 39 years old, Pat. That's still old.
Oh, that's funny.
1990, you guys were...
1990, I was not born.
Yeah, I was born a couple days after he was ordained.
See, I went to school with his mom. With his mom. Where'd your dad go to school?
Dad, yeah.
Yeah, there's a girl, yeah.
A lot of these haters talking about that. You still have great hair. So don't let the haters
knife
get you
to the
down.
Heart over here. Knife
yeah,
to the heart.
Don't let the haters get you down.
Your heart or my heart?
My heart. Yes, my heart. You bald. Do have great hair. I've got no hair.
Yeah, but you sport it well.
Well, thank you. Oh, okay. I try at that. He's just mad because we discovered there are no blonde saints.
Yeah, have you ever thought about that? There's no blonde saints.
Well, then what's the glow then?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, they all have this kind of this glow, you know.
The halo is blonde.
The halo is blonde.
So they're all blonde. They're all blonde at the end. All blondes go to heaven.
No blonde saints.
I know.
No blonde male saints?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Right. We talked about that because there's that feminine distinction. Ones.
Yeah, no blonde male
Catherine
saints.
Catherine Siena was blonde.
Now I'm going to be thinking about this.
I know.
I'm going to wake up at 3 o'clock and go, hey, I got an
That's what we aim to do here on about 4 o'clock.
That's what we do. But unfortunately, this has been wonderful, Pat. Unfortunately, we do have other things we've got to go to after this. We've got to wrap up. So again, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been great for all of us.
Thanks so much for asking.
You're a huge reason all three of us became priests. And
you guys have no idea how proud I am of you.
Thank you.
I mean, how proud I am to be part of this diocese. I can't imagine living, working, or ministering the gospel message anywhere else. But just to have you all as brothers in Christ, it's just very thrilling. It just makes my heart smile.
Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Pat, do you have the final word for today?
I just turned it off.
That's all right. We'll cut out the gap as you look it up.
So this comes from yesterday. This comes from Monday's Gospel. After this time, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and she went into seclusion for 5 months. Saying, so has the Lord done for me at a time when he has seen fit to take away my disgrace before others. So has the Lord done for me at a time when he sees fit. It's how our God is in our relationship with us. I mean, everything is according to his will. Everything is according to his timeline. It'll eventually happen. But sometimes we need to have the patience of Elizabeth.
See you next week.